So welcome to I suppose, the first of the Prog Australis podcast, which I think we're going to make a regular event. But with me in the room, I have Tim Bennetts, my sparring partner from Prog Australis.
Good afternoon.
And we have Zen Bennetts, or Zenitz as we call him for short, joining us for colour and commentary on the side. So how are you going, Zen?
Good, I think. Yes, I think I'm not quite sure of that yet.
Tim, Zen and I have got together to do this sort of thing. Normally we would be having a jam.
Absolutely.
But there are circumstances in the world right now that make audiences less interested in live music, I suppose. So your experience, Tim, you're in a number of bands. You're in a Brit invasion.
The one that's working the most before the COVID thing, we're ready to gig, you know. It's a brand new full show, you know, costume changes, and the agents were all interested. But then I think we would have been working very regularly, you know, if things were, you know, didn't change the way they did. But we're getting the odd gig here and there, but just like everyone's in so uncertain, the music industry is really.
So when was the last gig?
We played at the Ipswich Turf Club for a party, a private party, and there was lots of people there, but no dancing, and it was very strange. It was very strange indeed.
Was the audience socially distant?
Well, they had to all sit around these round tables and not move, and I got told off for standing there with a glass of water while someone was talking to me.
So. Oh, yes, not allowed to stand. Not allowed to lean at a bar or something.
And then at another gig we did at Redcliffe, which was lots of fun, where we did our 60s set, but I just find it very contradictive if you're into football, and no judgment to anyone that is, but if you're 10,000 people strong at a game and you're all spilling beer all over each other and there's no social distancing and you can basically do what you like there, but if a band was to play, well, everyone would have to leave, minus 10 or 50 people, and they would all have to sit down, and then when the band finished, everyone could come back in. That's how it looks to me. And, you know, if we treat the arts the same way as sport's getting treated at the moment, because we're all going through this together in every industry. So, I don't know. And I think the most therapeutic thing when times are tough is music and art and creativity. So that's my two cents.
And you're listening to Prog Australis Community Radio, where we use up dead air time with community announcements. No. What you are suggesting, Tim, is that there is perhaps an inconsistency between different forms of entertainment at the moment.
That's right. And I'm not biased to one side or the other. I just think it's...
Clearly not.
No.
Yeah. You know, if the arts, if the music industry had the same political power... the same money behind it that the NRL does, or
any type of sport, really.
Yeah, it's funny that you've got all that sponsorship money on the table, probably got dirt and all the politicians. Free tickets, you've been bribing them the whole time. I assume it's a much more powerful lobby group, and we saw that anyway, right?
Absolutely. Over many years.
Yeah. So I guess we can only hope that. No, I'm not going to put a positive spin on that.
Yeah. I just hope a lot of all the musicians that are struggling come out the other side. There's other things we can do, you know, be creative. It's not all about performance, is it? But it's...
Well, you could completely retrain, Tim. And
Get a real job.
Get a real job.
Do, really. Hey, I saw a thing on Facebook. There's John Lennon started crossing back to the other side and George was like, where are you going? Get a real job, mate.
the name of your band is...
Brit Beat Mania.
Brit Beat or Brits?
Brit Beat.
Brit. The name of your band is Brit Beat Mania. Am I correct?
Yes. We cover the whole British invasion thing from Cliff and the Shadows, the Beatles, all the 60s and 70s and 80s, new wave, rock, pretty much anything that, you know, that did well in England and around the world.
So you can't play anything. Full show. You can't play anything American.
No. you know, as much as I'd love to do some Motown. You know, some Frank Zappa, but I don't think the punters would be terribly impressed with hearing something by the Mothers of Invention, and not in Brisbane anyway.
What's been your experience getting work?
It seems that agents are asking, you know, if you're a 5-piece band, can you make this a 2-piece show or a 1-piece show? There's not really much work for bands, because I don't think the agents, you know, they'd be struggling as well, and maybe after all this, there won't be as many around.
Yeah, so the agents are just desperate for income as well.
That's right. And yeah, and I think with the struggling pubs, you know, whether they can afford to pay the bands, and it'll be an incentive if you're hiring bands, that it'll get people out again.
Essentially, it is the wrong time to be in a band.
Well, rehearsal rooms were usually drowned out by metal bands.
I remember that. Just get that coming in from the next room, the pressure on your ears.
Us. We rock up to rehearsal room and it's just maybe one or two bands.
So are they giving you a discount?
No.
Well, they're charging you more.
There's an awesome Rush poster in the one at Neon Studios, so I kneel before it when I get there, and it's a nice, pleasant thing to look at when you walk in.
So, I mean, I've got a few friends who have started gigging again, but only solo acts, and actually some of them are now doing duos.
Well, there's lots of that. I see it everywhere. Everywhere's doing that now. So.
No squads.
Yeah, well,
you haven't been to a live gig since when, Zen? When was the last time you went?
Probably around the end of last year.
Okay, Zen, now look, you were a live gig goer, but just how old are you though, Zen?
10. Okay. 11,
16. So you haven't quite got into the pub scene yet.
No, I want to though.
For the music, not for the drinking.
Yes.
In fact, you were denied entry to the last Steve Hackett show.
Yeah, so I wasn't impressed about that because there's nothing 18 plus about his music.
No, well, it was. So that was the Tivoli, Brisbane, a couple of years ago now, was it?
Yes.
It was an incredible show. I'm not trying to make you feel bad.
No, I got a video from him, so how was that? I'm fine.
Yeah, that was very, very lovely of Steve. Did a video message for Zen because he didn't think it was fair either, but it was just a licensing thing about for serving alcohol. So thankfully, if he comes back, because he's got a postponed show, that they're allowing Zen to go to the next one. So, Steve's a very, very lovely guy, wasn't he? Yeah,
because I remember we were sitting very close. I think I had front row.
And I was second.
And you were second row. Yeah. It was like you could have a conversation with him while he was while he was playing, and he'd talk back to you.
And it was incredible. And just the bass pedal shook the floorboards and shook everything. And Nick Beggs on kneeling on the ground and beating the crap out of them. It was just the most dramatic. You know, like it was the most intense gig, sound wise and just emotion. Like musician's paradise. You know, like a ear candy.
Biggest thing I remember is that he was absolutely flawless, his playing. Oh,
all of them.
It was precise, no flubs. It was, in fact, I think he's probably the first guitarist I've seen live who made me want to give up playing guitar.
I know what you mean. Yep.
You can see I could do that, or, oh, that looks like fun, oh, yeah, that'd be really easy, or, you know, oh, man, that's so good. But this is like, what's the point?
Well, I find with a lot of the prog musicians sometimes, and some of the fans as well, can there be a bit of snobbery in there? And I found that they were so humble, those guys, like Nad and Gary, the drummer, and just really lovely, down-to-earth people. But Nad, I was saying to Nad, oh, it's the best concert I've ever been to, and he's like, oh, I played terribly, I sung terribly. I'm like, oh, man, it was incredible, you know.
It is extraordinary how Nad is blessed with a voice that sounds exactly like Peter.
And then he can still do Phil's stuff too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Or was it Gary doing a bit of Phil's as well?
I can't remember.
I think Gary was singing some of that. It was Gary on drums.
Great drummer.
And he's wearing his suit.
Oh, it would have been so hot up there.
Yeah. So that was there. That was the Tivoli a couple of years ago. So Steve Hackett was supposed to come back here in June, I think. It was end of June or beginning of July.
We would have already been. The three of us would have already gone back.
Yeah, he was supposed to come back, and obviously because of the beer virus, it was postponed 2 years. So it is, what, June, July 22?
Oh, is it moved there?
Oh, no.
I thought it was 21.
You're right.
Yeah, I think it's 21.
Hang on. So it was rescheduled to, what, June, July 2021?
Yes.
Which I think is still massively optimistic.
It is. I still have my tickets, but I don't, not holding my breath, put it that way.
Well, some people say that it's scheduled for later. Like, don't know if it's 100% going to happen.
No, and that's often a way of not having to give your money back. You can reschedule it, not even have a date. Steve Hackett, at least he's set a date.
He has.
And they offered refunds.
Yep.
Bless them.
He's a good man.
Yeah, he is.
I guess I'm very thankful, and I think Zen is very lucky that you've seen so many concerts in your lifetime.
I want to say my mum's only been to 2 concerts.
You've been to about 15?
I've been to like over 15, and she is in her 30s and I'm only 10.
So, yeah, if live gigs kind of cease for a while, at least we've got some up your sleeve.
Memories.
What is your favourite of your shows that you've seen, Zen?
Probably Roger Waters.
Oh, say no more.
Us and Them's just come out on DVD and I want to get it.
I bought that. I bought that last weekend.
Yeah, I'm keen. I feel you were inspired because you went away and learned a lot of their songs after that.
I haven't stopped listening to Floyd after that moment.
Good man. And for those listening at home, Zen is currently wearing a Final Cut T-shirt.
Which is, this is very controversial, their best album.
In your opinion.
I love it. It's not necessarily their best.
I don't think that's controversial at
all. My two favourites are The Division Bell and Final Cut. So the two polar opposites are my favourites.
That's true. On the record, I think my favourite is The Division Bell as well.
Yeah. Awesome.
Though a lot of that's got to do with context and the fact that I was there and I lived the whole process. I lived the anticipation leading up to the album.
Yeah,
lived the release day. I was almost going to stand in line outside the record market on the eve of it, but I actually won one from Triple M like the day before.
That's so cool.
And I think I went in and got it, so I had it a day before other people did.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
And look, Dave, if you're listening, I know I was supposed to meet you in the lineup that night and I bailed because I already had the album. I do apologise. In retrospect, that was silly. I should have gone anyway for the atmosphere.
Oh, it's a special album. And I spent my teenage years believing that anything without Roger Waters wasn't worth my time, but I totally am completely opposite to that now. I think the Gilmore era was incredible.
What I found about The Division Bell is that it continues to give.
Yeah,
I know when I heard it for the first time, it wasn't exactly what I was expecting. It was a bit more laid back. It was a bit softer. I was expecting the drums to be huge and they weren't. It was kind of interesting that And it did throw me a bit because it was a bit more country, like Coming Back to Life is a country song. Lost for Words is
similar to On Every Street's approach. Then.
Right. I could keep listening to The Division Bell and then the gifts started to give themselves up after a while.
That's cool.
And the production is so good, there's always something going on to keep you sonically interested as well.
His tone on the guitar is incredible on that one. Is it either of those two albums in your favourite? So I think yours is an older one, isn't it?
I'll probably say Division Bell. The other one's probably The Wall.
So how do you get into The Wall as a kid? Now, I mean this seriously because I remember my parents had The Wall on vinyl and so much of it was unlistenable, generally when Roger was singing in his strained voice. So, you know, as a kid and you hear Don't Leave Me Now.
The real dark stuff.
Yeah. How did you learn to appreciate that?
I was only 8 or 9 when I heard it for the first time.
Oh, it's ages ago. I was 7 or 8 when I heard it for the first time as well. So
really?
Yeah. So what drew you into it?
The first song I got into from it was probably Comfortably Numb or Hey You.
And then how is it that you could get sucked into the rest of the album?
Just the way of the tone. Just I could listen to the whole entire way through, just constant. I love the whole album. I don't know how to explain it because it's a really interesting one. If anyone hasn't heard it, listen to it. Yeah, it's a good one.
I think what got you switched on to them big time was when we saw David Gilmour at the movies.
Yes.
And that was
was that
a game
the Pompeii
changer.
One?
Yeah,
yes,
Return.
That blew my mind.
Well, I have to balance this. We have to talk Final Cut as well.
Okay.
We've talked Division Bell, but we've also got to talk Final Cut.
Yeah, it's also like The Wall too. So yeah.
Well, I find the Final Cut certainly is maligned by a lot of people. I assume it came out, it went to number 1 and then it virtually disappeared. They didn't tour it and then that was like the end of Pink Floyd. I never had that context when I listened to it. I'd heard that people said it was not that good, and the first time I heard it I was pleasantly surprised.
I was blown away. It's so emotional. Well, that was my introduction to Pink Floyd. Before I even heard of Brick in the Wall, was my mate's dad was an audio nerd and he had incredible equipment and he used to try and scare children. They used to get babysat there by turning up.
Get your filthy hands off my desert.
And it used to shake the entire house and our kids would scream. And I used to love the tune with this strange voice I used to hear. It's funny how Dave Gilmour really disliked that album and some of his finest moments are on that. His guitar playing is incredible on that album.
Yeah, but he was there. He was there when it was being made. And
sorry, he was being him.
I think I understand everyone had an absolutely miserable time making it.
And even Roger.
I think even Roger says he had a miserable time. Yeah. And I remember an interview, and I've never been able to find it since, where David said he would come home from the studio and just cry.
Far out.
That he had, you know, such a horrible time.
That's awful.
I know.
It's funny how on any Pink Floyd fan page, you know, you don't sort of follow them anymore, but if that album comes out, just how much slagging there is on it, or that's a Waters solo album. Like, that's what everyone says. It's not.
Well, it's not. It's not.
It isn't.
The production is awesome. So, well, the 83 that came out?
Yeah.
It does not sound like the 80s to me.
No, it doesn't.
It just sounds like everything is bold. I'll give you that. The drums sound huge. And I think the drums sound fantastic.
They do.
And I know Roger, for instance, has said if he were to do that album again, that he wouldn't make it. He wouldn't make it so crash bangy. Yeah, he wouldn't make it with so many dynamics and so many things to scare you left, right and center. But I think that's precisely what makes it work. And then you've got the massive emotional undercurrent.
Yeah, it's a sad album, man.
Mm.
You can hear it in his voice. You can certainly hear it in the lyrics.
No three-part harmonies either.
No.
Just him sounding very upset.
Yeah. And maybe it's because Gilmour's moments are so sparse on that album that when he does manage to get a guitar solo in, you know, I, for one, am blown away.
Oh, the Fletcher Memorial Home guitar solo is probably my favourite thing he's done, up with two or three others. On the Turning Away, Coming Back to Life. And how dry his guitar sounds in some ways. Oh, no, that's more of an Animals thing, isn't it?
And apologies to anyone who's not a guitar nerd, but I think this is what we're going to be talking about. I think the podcast is revealing itself. So he says that they just took his rig that they used on the Wall concert tour and they just set it up in the studio and mic'd that up, and that's what he played. And he's got a guitar tone which to me sounds totally contemporary and desirable still to this day for me.
Absolutely.
I think it's his best. I think it's his best recorded guitar tone up to that point.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that.
Even better than Momentary.
Yep, that's not a consistent album, I don't think. Apparently, they listened to when they were recording it and writing it. They listened to Brothers in Arms as an example of a good 80s album and a bit of an example.
Yeah. That was Ezrin, wasn't it?
Yeah. So you need to listen to this, which is cool. I could just imagine them sitting there listening to Mark Knopfler. That's cool.
I am surprised they've never worked together in any recording sense.
Oh, I think that they have a very emotional style of playing that's similar in so many ways. I connect them, you know, in the same way. But then musically, kind of worlds apart, like I guess in the songwriting side of things. But then there's certain other things that they're both very contemporary, you know, and I consider Love Over Gold a progressive rock album, and people take offence to that and some people totally agree with it. So
who takes offence to that?
Oh, this stupid Facebook. Because in the prog page, someone always once a month shares that album. Yeah. And then they get reaction of, oh, you can't put Dire Straits on a page like this.
Yeah, it's a funny old thing. What's fun is to see people who've built their career on being prog and you have taken advantage of that audience. And then you try to broaden your musical horizons to a more pop mainstream audience.
It's difficult, isn't it?
My example for that, I imagine, is Stephen Wilson right now. I've seen a lot of hatred.
Because he's going the pop direction.
Yeah, for his recent kind of single that came out.
Yeah.
Because he's just, you know, he's going pop now and he's turning his back on his prog audience.
It sounds like what people were saying to Genesis.
Yeah, but the pop back then is a lot better than the pop now.
Well, I think, yeah.
That's
I think,
insightful.
No, I think the thinking is that, yeah, why are you bothering to do this? Because the pop music that you come out with will still be too intelligent to reach
and left of field.
Yeah, to reach a larger audience. I mean, look, you could do it in the 80s. You had to do it in the 80s. Owner of a Lonely Heart, bang, no worries. I still think if you put something like that out today, it's not going to get, no one will hear it.
No, the timing was right, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And Genesis did a very good transition to the pop thing. One thing that's just come to mind that I think is really cool is Zen's little buddies at school and how they've slowly been sucked in to really cool music via memes.
Your song Roundabout has been known for like this to be continued thing. It's like a drama show. Something bad happens and then it cuts and then it says to be continued and then you have to wait for the next episode.
And it plays the
song.
Yeah.
And now all my friends know what the song is because of how viral that has gone.
That's very interesting.
And you played the song, the whole song in class, and everyone was okay with it because it's a meme.
They know it.
It's just basically sucked them in, and I'm stoked. I've heard the same thing about Fleetwood Mac sales have just quadrupled because of someone drinking Ocean Spray cranberry juice while on the roller skates playing Dreams, and that's just like basically made their catalogue just double in sales.
So what you're saying is that Stephen Wilson needs to get into the world of memes.
Yes.
If he wants to branch out into and get a larger pop audience. Tim, you and I have a live recording coming out.
Yes. From our gig at the Junk Bar, the Prog Australis. Very, very fun time that was.
It was a memorable evening.
Absolutely.
July of last year already. So over a year ago, we certainly picked a good time to start a duo.
At the night, Brisbane got progged.
They're still talking about it in certain circles, I understand.
Yeah, I remember seeing it. They were talking about it on Sunrise this morning.
That's right, and the insurance companies are still paying out. I did record multi-track that night. We had a couple of video cameras going. No, video quality is not so great. I'm not sure if we should, you know, make an official video release. Most of it's kind of on YouTube at the moment. However, the audio has cleaned up quite nicely, I think.
I must say, the way the YouTube videos sound, if it's anything like that, it's going to be...
This is much better.
Wow, cool.
So what's your memory of that night, Tim? I do remember, at least I possibly pushed you and bullied you into starting songs when, you know, you might have preferred a bio break at some point.
I can't recall.
Oh, good.
I felt really relaxed. I'd had like one, you know, glass of rum and coke or something and just really got into it, you know, so closed my eyes and got lost in the music.
You did. You certainly did close your eyes a lot.
I got told that I look like Joe Cocker. I was like falling around the place and leaning against the curtains, you know, like...
At least you left your hat on.
Yeah. Oh, man. I really enjoyed, you know, being a part of the band, to be able to play your songs because it was really challenging to learn. As someone that's an untrained musician that has no idea what the name of chords and...
Who, you or me?
Me.
Well, both of us, really. Well, except I know what some of the chords are called.
Called, yeah, yeah.
But no one else knows what that means because I call the chords the way I... Blah, blah, blah. No, Tim, I appreciate that. And, you just have boosted your royalty rate. So, nice work.
And then we were doing songs, and that was another thing that I was just going to say is like I'd been playing Echoes, say with a Filipino friend of mine I used to jam with, and he'd sing it, and I've done it in a band once years and years ago, but then I'd been playing those Floyd songs on my own for so many years, and then we come together and then it's just like, oh, we both know this song.
I've got to say that out of everything that's on that recording, the thing I am most proud of is that I actually played Echoes all the way through.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. It's like, you know, a song that's sort of been ingrained in my mind for so many years and then to be able to jam on it and just get into it, it's great, you know.
Yeah, like, certainly I think it's one of the highlights.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Good fun, you know. I like the little King Crimson thing.
I was about to say, played King Crimson.
Out of all the prog bands, I'm least familiar with them, even though I've got most of their albums, but I there's some moments to their stuff that's just at the very top of the prog ladder, you know. I love them, but I don't explore them often. I guess, you know, Tull, I come and go from. I'll play them, yeah. or, you know, even with Yes, or I'm going through a big Rush phase at the moment. So it's just, I'm a phasey.
I'm in a Yes phase at the moment. Yeah. Definitely in the Yes phase.
Oh, about that.
Beware of the Yes phase. It's very hard to get back to the real world.
Absolutely.
From a Yes phase. I mean that honestly.
Glenn was 19. A drummer from 7 Day Mask is 19. Introduced me to Rush and Neil Peart, and he said he was 19 when he discovered Yes, and he was rocking up to band practice with his originals, and they're like, what's going on with you, Glenn? You've changed.
Yes.
Your playing is completely different. It's fantastic.
On one of my exclusive yes periods where I just couldn't listen to anything else, Diabolik came out of that.
That's
that
cool.
And it was perfectly natural for me to be playing in that time.
And the keyboard on those part, keys, it's impossible to play.
I think it's in 10/8.
It is really, really hard.
I mean, I had to relearn it years later when I got back to finish the song. But that was, yeah, that was totally a yes period at the time.
It changed my complete approach to music. And the reason I put the guitar, because I was a lead guitarist all through my teens and bands, and it's the reason I put the guitar aside and never really went back to become a full-time keyboard player is slightly to do with Emerson, Lake and Palmer, but mainly Rick Wakeman and what he did with Yes and on his own. And it's definitely went, oh, okay, I want to be a keyboard player full-time.
Speaking of keys and Yes, you certainly studied Tony Kaye for Starship Trooper, I must say.
The real dry organs.
And the notes and the sound, and it's very clear. Man, this is someone who knows the track backwards and is doing a Tony Kaye, and I appreciated that so much.
Oh, cheers.
So, look, going forward, it's very difficult to think about going forward as far as it being a live show that we can play in a venue in the present time, and it has been for the last 6 months or something.
Yeah.
You know, we would have done another one already by now. Had the venues been open?
Yeah.
It leaves either live streams, I suppose, or just more videos coming out of a rehearsal performance. I don't know. It's very difficult to know where
both.
To go.
You're both, because those jams we recorded have been great fun to watch on YouTube. You know?
Yeah, for us, both of us. But, I mean, you'd definitely had ideas of what else we would play next time. At the risk of giving away secrets, we were going to open with Toto.
I've always loved the idea of doing the opening track on their opening album, Child's Anthem.
Yep.
It's an instrumental piece, and it's a really uplifting, great progressive rock track, because they weren't entirely a prog band, but when they did it good.
And they still did it on their...
recent one.
On their last studio album.
Yeah,
they still did it.
I like how they mix it. They keep it straight as well, you know. Picaro's just incredible. He's just... the whole band, amazing. Taya Hydra's just a perfect album.
Yeah. What else were we going to add? There was something from Ice House, I think, we were going to add.
And
Ice House. Ice House was the name of the song. That was one we could do.
And saying that, it is that album's 40th anniversary yesterday.
And there's another reissue, I believe.
Yes.
That's come out.
And I think it's their best song, by the way.
We can get together.
Great song.
We can get together. Lots of Bowie impersonations.
Why is the writing on the walls?
great song.
Yeah. Who put the writing on the walls?
Who put the writing on the... Fat man. Which he said, Ivor said, is an angel song.
Yeah, right.
I didn't...
There you go.
I didn't quite, but he wanted to do an angel song, so he did. Wasn't it, Ivor?
What I love about Ice House is they just broke the mould when every band sounded like your typical pub rock thing with...
Yeah, there was,
and they were not that.
There was Aussie pub rock at the time. I don't know. Yeah, Angels, Chisel, We Meant Work, all that kind of stuff.
The only sort of contemporaries I could think of that weren't like that at the time were Red Gum and the Bushwhackers, but they were off on a different tangent. I found they were quite progressive with their genre mixing, but they were far on the more folk rock thing.
Yeah, and then Ice House went on to be Bowie and Roxy.
Roxy music?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Like the early Roxy vibe.
Well, even some of the Mr. Cool, Brian Ferry vibe.
Yeah, nice.
You can hear Bowie in it. I can definitely hear Roxy music in it. You can definitely hear Europe in those Ice House songs in a way that you don't hear that in the other Australian acts from the time.
Oh, and there's keyboards. It's the melodies, you know, like it's just really, really refreshing. Like Man of Colours, you know, like it doesn't sound Australian, but then it does in so many ways, you know. My favourite musician, one of my favourite Australian musicians is Vince Jones, and he does not sound Australian, but he's just a very unique talent that really doesn't get recognised. He gets more recognised overseas. Like many cool Australian bands, Dead Can Dance is another example. Hardly ever gig in their own country, you know.
Yeah, I mean, well, Prog Australis.
Prog Australis, yes, yeah. Absolutely.
It's almost as if Ice House was incredibly lucky to be able to be doing something that I think was so different from what everyone else was doing and have a hit
absolutely.
And be successful.
Split Ends was a New Zealand example of that too.
Right, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Split Ends another, you know, they started off as a prog act, right?
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah.
One Step Ahead is probably my favourite song of theirs.
Great song.
Isn't it?
Great song. It's a Neil song, isn't it?
Yep.
See, Split Enz also had the advantage of at least two geniuses.
Absolutely.
With Neil and Tim.
Lennon and McCartney almost.
Yeah. And then, of course, you've got Eddie, who's indelibly stamping his signature on the music. You can tell it's him on his synth sounds. With Tom and Neil working off each other and probably trying to outdo each other. They just go from height to height.
I've heard this, and I don't know whether it's true, that Paul McCartney, because they were based in London in the late 70s, early 80s, when they're trying to break it.
Oh, yes, yes.
And Paul McCartney used to go and sneak into the audience and watch them because he respected them immensely. I wouldn't be surprised by that.
Yeah, Mac is probably nicking their ideas.
Yeah, that's right. My favourite Tim song would be the Poor Boy, I think. The bass line in
that. Yes, that is a great one.
Reminds me of my sister. If I ever want to think of my sister, I'd play them because the True Colours album, which was released 40 years ago this year as well. So
bloody hell.
That was her thing because she'd just moved from New Zealand. She was a teenager that just come from the heart of New Zealand and that was the big thing, you know. You're very proud to they were theirs, you know. There's another band called Mother Goose, which were on the same label, same sort of style, really, really eccentric. Except they just disappeared. And they were on Countdown numerous times, but they just disappeared into obscurity and the hits don't get played on the radio anymore. But there's definitely a band worth looking into if anyone's interested in checking them out. They're from Dunedin.
I probably like Tim's songs better in Split Enz than Neil's.
Definitely.
And clearly Neil came into his own in the Crowdies once he
Yeah, and good on him.
And then you've got Woodface.
Oh, that album.
Very interesting, yeah, where Tim joins Crowded House.
That's right.
And I imagine all
it's the other way around this time.
Yeah, and I imagine all the rivalries resurface.
Yes.
All the confusion about who's the leader of the band.
Neil would be probably going on about, well, I got more album sales and...
Look, I don't know. I don't know if they argued, but I do remember Tim kind of saying, well, in Split Enz, he was the leader and, you know, Neil wasn't. But in Crowded House, he was stepping in.
Younger brother, wasn't
he? Yeah. He's stepping into a band where he's no longer the leader. Neil is the leader. And then they've just got this new dynamic they've got to try to work around and work with. And I think he said he left that lineup because he found he was becoming too authoritarian.
Yeah, right. This isn't his personality.
And just to contradict everything I said before, Message to My Girl is probably my favourite of the end songs. And that's a Neil song. But, you know, Eddie's keys on that are phenomenal as well.
And One Step Ahead is a Neil song too, and that's one of their best.
Yeah. And then you got Tim's solo work. No Thunder, No Fire, No Rain, which I love. There's a Fraction Too Much Friction. God.
Oh, I haven't heard that in years. Didn't Dave Dobbin guest on their reunion Enzo thing?
Oh, yes, he did. Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. A lot of Kiwis are like, he's the Jimmy Barnes of New Zealand. Like,
really?
Yeah, like the embarrassed almost. Like, I actually think he's kind of cool. Like, but over there, you know, the whole unhip thing, you know, when people use Jimmy Barnes to represent our country, when I don't really like people doing that.
And yeah. they just he's that guy from...
Slice of Heaven.
Yeah, he's a guy...
song.
I tried to play that song in the My Covers band.
It's a hard song to play.
It's a hard song to play and to play right.
It's so much layering going on there.
And the chord changes are there.
And I like how it's not reggae, but then it becomes reggae.
Yeah, really strange. Getting back to going forward for Prog Australis, I've had a number of requests for Firth of Fifth.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I can sort of play it. I'll work on it. That got me into Genesis, that song.
Problem with that is I respect that song too much to think that I could play it. That's a very, very important Steve Hackett guitar solo in the middle of that song. Yeah.
I like the idea of the challenge.
Yeah, that's true. I wouldn't want to do it a disservice though.
Yeah, true. We could just give it a go, see how it goes. Yeah.
I would have the good sense not to learn that solo word for word.
Yeah.
I would have to do it.
Like Tubular Bells 2 type thing.
Yeah, I'd have to do it. Though I did that when we did Crimson, Caught the Crimson King.
Yeah.
We played around with that a bit because there is nothing in the way that Robert Fripp plays guitar that I could really replicate. And I wouldn't want to insult him by trying to replicate what he does.
He's a grumpy chap, isn't he?
well, apparently not. Not with his recent kind of lockdown videos with Toya. Yeah. I don't want that to be seen as a disrespect. This is not a Rabin Howe thing. I dumbed it down.
It sounded good. It was fun to play and... I'd suggest we do some Van de Graaff generator, but we don't have a soprano sax player that plays two saxophones at once. So, and they don't have any guitars.
Is Kenny G available? No.
Yeah, we could throw in Michael Bolton on this well.
So that is the Prog Australis live release coming your way, digitally speaking. It goes for about 74 minutes. You could fit it on one CD if you want to. It's got a couple of little bonus tracks at the end. We half played Sorrow that night. We did the intro to Sorrow and then proceeded to disappoint everybody, including ourselves, by not actually playing the song.
That was when my Moog Taurus bass pedals were working.
Aha. Uh-huh.
That's right. I'm so glad we got to use them. They're in repair at the moment.
And look, the other thing I threw in there was our spontaneous rendition of Happy Birthday. And luckily the rights have cleared on that now, so Happy Birthday is public domain. And we were allowed to perform it and not pay lots of money, and we can release it and not pay lots of money. Otherwise, we would have had to sing You're the Birthday, Ooh. You're the Birthday, You're the Birthday, Boy or girl.
Oh, I love it.
So all good things must come to an end, unfortunately, this podcast notwithstanding.
And I'd like to thank the cat Pip for walking in and a tail hit the spring and made a lovely noise, a contribution. So
we have nothing but the highest quality equipment. That's an ending.
Cool. Firstly, I've got a problem with the arrangements backstage. It's just miniature bread, you know. We're working with it like half an hour, you know.